The following is an episode of This Alt-Right Life, a podcast I hosted for the website Right On from May 2016 to January 2017. It is presented in its original, uncensored form. This episode of This Alt-Right Life, an interview with Kyle Truppel, was originally aired on August 22nd, 2016.
This is This Alt-Right Life with Matt Forney.
Get ready. The world is changing.
And a very warm welcome to you, whether you're listening in Europe, America, or anywhere in the world. I'm Matt Forney, and this is This Alt-Right Life. I'm coming to you from my makeshift studio somewhere in the sea underbelly of Chicago, Illinois. Thank you for tuning in to this 16th episode of the program for this, the week of August 22nd, 2016. On this episode of the show, I'll be talking to Kyle Truppel. Kyle is an American author whose writing is focused on travel, women, and self-improvement for men. You can visit him at his blogs, This Is Trouble, at thisistrouble.com, and Bachelor Travels at bachelortravels.com. He is also the author of the books Cracking OkCupid and Trouble in Hungary. Additionally, Kyle has an active YouTube channel and also hosts the Troublesome Radio podcast. On this show, Kyle and I discuss his recent experiences in Paris, the refugee crisis, and how European countries are being colonized by non-whites. We also talk about his experiences in Istanbul during the recent terrorist attack, his travels across Eastern Europe, his thoughts on why Eastern Europeans have been able to resist the cultural Marxist onslaught affecting the West, and much more. So stay tuned. Kyle, welcome to This Alt-Right Life. Thank you for coming on the program.
Matt, thanks for having me, man. I'm looking forward to getting started.
Okay, cool. Now, I do this with my first-time guests because it's always a good idea to let the subject define themselves in their own words and not put words in their mouth. Now, for the people in the audience who don't know who you are, Kyle, could you just give a brief overview of yourself, your work, that kind of thing?
Yeah, of course. I am a kind of actually long-time ROK writer on and off for the last 3 years. I run the blog thisistrouble.com as well as bachelortravels.com. I am a former cubicle jail monkey engineer turned professional blogger, and since April of this year, I've spent my time traveling around the world and seeing a lot of cool things and seeing a lot of things that maybe aren't so cool. So that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, exactly. Kyle, the main thing I wanted to talk to you about was you know, two big things recently, two major articles. You visited Paris, and you gave your commentary on basically the decline of France in general, the refugee crisis and the influx of immigrants. And you were also actually in Istanbul during the time of the suicide bombing at the airport there. Now, let's start with Paris. You want to give an overview of your experiences in Paris and what you observed about the social decline there?
Of course. So I'm sure most of you listening to this are pretty familiar with the multiple attacks in Paris that have happened over the last year. In case there was the shooting last November all around the city, there was the Nice bus issue, as well as a lot of just other things that don't quite make the news from what I get. And so this was a family trip that had been planned for quite a long time. And after the Istanbul attacks and me being stuck there, I really wasn't too keen on going, but it was kind of one of those things where there really wasn't a lot of choice. I mean, reorganizing a vacation for four people at the last minute's not a walk in the park in the peak time. But in any case, what I really observed was a lot of social decline throughout Paris. It is no longer a white Parisian city, with a rich culture. I mean, the history is still intact in the food and the architecture and some things, but if you take a good long walk around Paris, it's just not a white city, and some will call me racist. I'm just reporting the facts. You're much more likely to see an African colony than you are, you know, one of the richest European cities in the history of the world. And that's something that shouldn't be taken lightly, because it's setting a really scary example for the rest of the world.
Yeah, you pointed out in your article that there are whole sections of Paris now that look more like Africa than anywhere in Europe. And it's my perspective on this is that, you know, we all believe that cultures have the right to preserve themselves, but we see Paris and we see, you know, France and all these other Western European countries more or less being colonized through the refugee crisis, through mass non-white immigration. And as you point out, like you said, there are just whole sections of Paris that just don't look like Europe anymore.
Yeah, correct. To kind of elaborate on that, I think the first issue is the obviously like the Syrian refugee, everyone coming from the Middle East. And, you know, they've gone through the Central Europe, Budapest in the last year or so. And I don't know exactly how many numbers have been imported, but let's say it's a lot. So I was a little surprised that there weren't quite as many of those. But then I did realize that those refugees, I mean, they're not hanging out in the tourist area, despite the nice benefits package they get by coming in. They're not, you know, being put on the Champs-Élysées. So when you're hanging out in all the tourist areas, it may not be a perfectly good representation of that. But on one night, as you said, I ventured out to the 18th district. So that's on the outskirts for dinner. And my family and I found a nice little restaurant out there. And if you look at the picture on that post, I mean, you're talking 95% of people are Black, and they are looking like they're from African colonies. It's a little bit different than kind of how you would see a group of Black people in Chicago. I think it's definitely a different vibe than that. But let's put it this way. I mean, you wouldn't want to walk home at night through that. And it's just a very ghetto, kind of just rundown area. You see a lot of shady business going on the street. And the best thing, I mean, I've traveled a lot now. I've been through the ghettos of Colombia. I've spent considerable time in Ukraine. And I've learned that always the best thing to do is just trust my instinct. And my instinct in a place like that is this is not a place that you'd want to go hang around, which is so unlike what you would really see in a lot of the world. And I think, you know, like we said, Paris has such a rich history, and with it comes, you know, Napoleon and ruling the world and being a safe place and having power. And I think that my experience out there, even though it was short, was a really good insight into how little power France actually has over their current situation.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out too that these immigrants and these non-white populations, they're not just creating dangerous areas; they're overtly hostile to like the natives and to anyone who is outside of their group. This is a good article that Redon co-editor Anne Sterzinger wrote about a year ago for Tacky Mag. She was visiting France. She was visiting Paris to deal with the death of a friend, and said friend's widower lived in a suburb of Paris that used to be pretty middle class, but now is largely Muslim. And she described the experience of being basically run off the street by a couple of Muslims in caftans who called her a whore because she was wearing a skirt. You have the overt colonization is a perfect way to describe it, because you have these whole sections of these countries that simply are not European anymore, and they're being and the people there are antithetical to European values, and the natives are either putting up with this, the governments are just letting them in.
Yeah, and I think that's the real problem. You know, you see districts like this in Chicago that has a huge Polish district is a good example. And the sad part about a place like Paris is that we're talking entire districts, and in a city of 12 million people, that's a very large chunk that is, like you said, just being colonized out, and all of the rich history is being put away. And the real problem is that all of these people coming in aren't being forced to come into the Parisian culture, the French culture. It's they're being allowed to keep all of their own values, which, as you said, are absolutely anti-white or anti-European, however you want to put it. And like you said, they're just being allowed to walk right in, take over, and then really just harass the locals. And we'll put it this way. I mean, I'm a pretty in-shape guy. I've got a beard. Guys really aren't going to screw with me, but I certainly wouldn't be wanting my mom or my sister walking around an area like that.
Yeah. What sort of prospects do you see for France or these other countries to sort of pull themselves out of their current situation? Because guys like Mike Cernovich have pretty much said straight up, you know, France is lost, you know, like with the terrorist attacks in Nice. And you also wrote an article for my blog a few months back called on the Cologne rape attacks, which you sort of ask, I think, a pretty fair question. You have a lot of these women who, politically leftists. They were the ones holding up refugees welcome signs, and now they're the ones who are being targeted by these Muslims. You know, it's a fair question. Should we protect women who have basically been ushering in this problem? What direction do you see Western Europe going in based on what you've seen in France and elsewhere?
Okay, so that's a very kind of multi-pronged attack. So I think the UK, now that it has exited, is going to hopefully be able to fight off this influx and keep their culture. And I mean, I have a couple friends that live in the UK and they're pretty happy with the decision there. So I think that if London and the rest of the UK can be an example that parts of Western Europe maybe can be saved, I think that France, and from what I also hear, Germany, are probably too far lost. And the real problem with that is that it's hard to get people out. Because we'll use California, where I'm from, as a perfect example of how many Mexicans can cross the border. And to give a perfect example of that, like, I have a buddy who has a Ukrainian girlfriend and he makes good money. We're talking, you know, well over six figures, and he wanted to bring her to the US to visit for a week. And she just got denied her visa. But how many people are walking across the border every day into California and getting all sorts of benefits and on the taxpayer dime? The fact that that they can get in easier illegitimately than someone can legally is a perfect example of what has happened in Paris. They've let all these people in, and now their economy is screwed because, as I wrote here in this article, there are so many people hustling on the streets and they're trying to scam the tourists, but at the same time, they're scaring all these tourists away. And obviously with something like, you know, a bus flying through a crowd and killing, I think, 84 people, it's going to turn the tourism industry off. And so when you have so many people all trying to sell souvenir items because that's the only skill they have, you don't have anyone buying it. The fact of the matter is they're being overrun both from a cultural and an economic standpoint. And so I think of a place like France, how do you get millions and millions of people out of the country? I don't think it's possible. I don't know what it's going to take. I mean, ultimately, I don't think that these other cultures are going to rule Paris, because I think they simply will never be organized enough. But I think as far as the history of France, there's not going to be much left ultimately. It's going to become a colony, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, it's really depressing too. I mean, back in the 70s, Jean Raspail wrote the Camp of the Saints, which at the time was sort of dismissed as a far right wing, you know, fear mongering. You know, the idea that Europe would be colonized by all these third worlders. But we're literally watching it happen right now. We're seeing a massive influx of young men of fighting age from the Middle East and elsewhere, Africa, who are openly belligerent towards the native population. They're taking advantage of the native population. They're not acting like they're, you know, they're supposedly refugees fleeing a war. They're not acting like grateful refugees who are happy to be out of a war zone. They're acting like invading conquerors. And we see much of the population in Eastern Europe has done a much better job of resisting them, like Hungary, for example, building the four border fence. But in Western Europe, though, even after the terrorist acts in Germany, the Germans are still like, oh, well, refugees, welcome. You know, you really can't if the native population is just going to welcome their own displacement, there's really not a whole lot that can be done. And it's a tragedy too, because these are the countries which many of us Americans originated from. Europe was, to be perfectly honest, Europe is the cradle of modern civilization in all of its forms, and it's committing suicide.
Correct. And I think, like you said, they're continuing to welcome these refugees. And I read something the other day that Germany is supposedly flying them in the middle of the night so that their actual citizens aren't seeing this happen. And I have a friend, a Spanish friend, who's working in Germany now. And he said that, you know, their economy is in very good shape. Like, they get jobs right out of college. They're in a good situation. They actually need the unskilled labor. The problem is they're importing unskilled labor that's incredibly violent and resistant to the German culture. And as you said in that article that I wrote for your site, you know, in the Cologne assaults, you know, 1,000 women were assaulted. And the article is basically the premise: men aren't fighting for women anymore, and women are sitting there welcoming these refugees with open arms. And I think it's partially the German men say, you know what, you made your bed, you got to sleep in it. And it's partially that men of the West simply aren't strong. Like, I'm in Ukraine right now, and let me tell you that if there were 1,000 girls being assaulted by refugees on the streets, you would have a lot of refugees in the hospital. And there is no doubt about that. And that's because the women here are worth fighting for. They're sweet, they're feminine, they take care of their men. They understand the necessity of a core society where men and women get along. Whereas just like in the US, Germany has really taken a stance of pitting men against women. And as a result, you know, they're on their own. And so it's very easy then to cry wolf and say, oh, we need a man now. And it's only when it comes matter to their own safety in life that these Western women are starting to realize that that's the only time they want men. And guess what? They've now raised those men to not answer that call.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you bring up, Kyle. Do you think that it's the women becoming masculinized and, like, you know, promiscuous that turns men off, or is it men just sort of becoming effeminate that sort of turns women off? Like where do you think this sort of gender conflict that is resulting in what, like, happened in Cologne starts? I think it's kind of my personal opinion is that it's a sort of a feedback loop. Like, you have weak effeminate men breed slutty women, breed weak effeminate men, and they just sort of go back and forth. The writer David Goldman over a decade ago had something he called Spengler's Universal Law of Gender Parity, and it's that in every epoch of history, in every culture in the world, men and women, the men and women of that culture deserve each other. And if you end up in a country that breeds slutty women who are completely masculinized and independent, they don't need no man, and they're going to breed weak, effeminate hipster types who won't lift a finger to defend them in self-defense. So where do you think the problem starts?
I think it goes both ways, and I'm hesitant to pin all the blame on any one gender. But as you said, I think it's a feedback loop, and I think the initial part of it really revolves around who started all of this beliefs and then who allowed it to happen. So if women came up with all of this scheme of feminism and wanted to be more masculine, it's the initial men that allowed that and promoted it. And why they did that, I don't know. Were they scared of not having sex? Were they scared of women in general? I don't know. But once that loop started, it's just a domino effect until you have a group of men strong enough to stand up against it, because unfortunately or not, women are still going to hold the gateway to sex, and that is something that any sane man from 20 to 65 needs in his life. And so as long as they have that key, they're going to have the power unless the men become stronger. And yes, women are turned on by masculine, strong men, and men are turned on by feminine women. Unfortunately, now, though, we've reached, like you said, a state where the men aren't willing to stand up to say what they want, and the women are just testing. And I write about this all the time on my blog. You know, it's very much a game-focused blog. Women are always going to get away with as much as you let them do. If you let them treat you like shit and let them walk on you, they're going to take as much as they can, and then they're going to divorce you and take all of your money on top of that. Until you set a boundary of what it is and isn't acceptable, that boundary is continuously going to be pushed. And so in some ways, I look at this and say, maybe this is the final push. Maybe these refugees coming in and raping and taking their women is finally the call that German men, Sweden men, French men need to say, okay, enough is enough with this feminism and multiculturalism. We have to take back our country, or simply put, we aren't going to have any women to have sex with, and very possibly we're going to lose our home, our land, and our entire history and culture. And so I look at this as one gigantic shit test that, as of now, a lot of men in the West are failing. So whose fault is it? It's partially women's fault for continuing to take advantage of the fact that men like sex. It's partially men's fault for continuing to allow women to walk on them. Ultimately, it's going to take a bit of a harsh wall that men are going to have to put up. And then women are naturally, as they're biologically programmed to, they're going to mold to that. And once men have the balls to say, no, this isn't okay, we're done with this, we're going to rise up and defend our land, then the women are going to be turned on by that and be happy with their own men. But until then, the refugees are more exciting.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Now, to push the conversation forward a little bit, as I mentioned earlier, Kyle, you were actually in Istanbul when the recent terrorist attacks happened at the airport. You want to describe a bit more about your experiences in Istanbul?
It was scary, definitely. That's the best way to put it, is that when I had walked through that airport 24 hours beforehand, you know, I'm watching this video of the guy blowing himself up and saying, oh, wow, I know that arrivals hall right there. However, the really frightening thing is that it is a part of their everyday life. And I think that Turkey is a perfect example of what places like Paris or London or Germany can become, which is living in a constant state where a terrorist attack is a normal part of life. And if you look at, you know, where it is on the map, like Istanbul truly is the bridge between the two cultures. It's got Europe on one side and it's got the Middle East on the other. You can literally take a boat from continent to continent. And it's the perfect example of what a violent culture hell-bent on destroying Europe can be. Because as you cross that bridge, you can see the difference in the way that the city is. It's very westernized, very European on one. And when those people are living in a fear that they're going to get attacked any day, that's a scary process. And so there's a lot of attacks that go on in Istanbul and the rest of Turkey that we don't hear about in the rest of the world. Just talking to people around the town, shop owners, restaurant owners, it was like, oh, another terrorist attack, no big deal. And that's just something that's that Paris is going to be if they don't put their foot down. That's what Germany's going to turn into. They are going to turn into a new Istanbul, but instead of already having a bit of that culture, it's going to be taking it over, and they're going to be hell-bent on taking over these Western European cities. So getting a little off topic there, but in short, like, it's just a very typical part of their culture, and it's terrifying of what it's going to become.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm sort of familiar with Turkey. I'm familiar with the whole gradual Islamification that's happened in Turkey over the past decade under I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong, Erdogan. But I didn't know about the prevalence of terrorist attacks in Istanbul and other parts of Turkey. And you're right that that's a kind of horrifying prospect for Europe to look forward to. Because on a pure economic level, having terrorist attacks going off in the city every other day is not good for business. It puts the population into a constant state of fear. It causes a degradation of living standards. The constant conflict just results in complete societal collapse going down the line. We saw recently with the attempted coup against the Turkish government that was basically secular Kemal Atatürk type forces trying to wrest control of the government from the Islamists in charge, and they failed. So we can probably look, and also Erdogan, and again, I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong, has basically been, treating the European Union, like the way a mafia guy treats like a business. He wants to extort protection money by basically threatening, you need to give us EU membership, you need to give us all these perks, we're going to let more refugees in since they're all going through Turkey. He's basically saying to Europe, nice continent you got there. It would be a shame if something happened to it. It's an incredibly fucked up and tragic situation.
It really is. And unfortunately, Europe is going to be at the point where he's already got their balls, in his hands, and they need to do something about it. Or better yet, they need to take a page out of the books of Hungary and Poland and other Eastern European countries that have said, no, we're not doing this. We cannot support it. And if they don't, it's just going to become a mess, as we've already said. But kind of back to Istanbul, as I said, it's a very common part of their life. And the night that it happened, I was out at a bar and people were just wandering the streets as normal, like looking to see what was going on. You didn't see people running home to hide out. And then even the next day walking around, I was on edge. I was tense, but everybody else there seemed like it was just a normal part of life. And I mean, you know how honest our media is. They paint all these pictures of how secure the airport is, and there's all these bomb sniffing dogs. But about 48, maybe 72 hours, 2 or 3 days after the attacks, I was back at that airport and I drove in a taxi all the way up a departures area, and I did not get looked at once. And the media has all these pictures that they've got checkpoints going for miles out multiple times. Not a thing. I walked right into the area where that bomb went off just a few days prior, like nothing happened, which is a really scary prospect that shows that they don't care there. Not that they don't care, but they don't have the resources to make it more safe, but our media wants us to think it's safe. And that's a scary prospect.
Yeah, they just want to they want to cover it up and be like, oh, business as usual, when there's something completely different going on that is deleterious to people's lives. Now, as you brought up Poland and Hungary and Eastern Europe in general. We are about at the midway point of the program, so we are going to take a quick break, and in the next segment we're going to discuss Kyle's experiences in Eastern Europe, his thoughts on women there, and why Eastern Europe has been able to resist the refugee crisis and all these leftist bugaboos better than Western Europe. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes. I'm Matt Forney, and you're listening to This Alt-Right Life.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with your rain, I've got a smile on my face. I'll walk down the lane with a happy refrain, just singing, singing in the rain. Why am I smiling? Why do I sing? Why does December seem sunny as spring? Why do I get up each morning to start happy and head up with joy in my heart? Why is each new task a trifle to do? Because I am living a life full of you. Say I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with your rain, I've got a smile on my face. I'll walk down the lane with a happy refrain, just singing, singing in the rain.
You're listening to This Alt-Right Life with Matt Forney.
Welcome back. I'm speaking to Kyle Trouble, author of Cracking the Cupid and Trouble in Hungary. Now, Kyle, as you've mentioned, you've spent much of the past year living in various places in Eastern Europe. You mentioned you're in Ukraine. You've been to Lithuania, Poland, Hungary. What are your general thoughts on the region? Its cultural uniqueness. Like, what are your favorite countries, etc. And what sort of recommendations would you have for men who are looking to relocate to Eastern Europe? You don't have to. I mean, I know that's kind of a mouthful. You don't have to answer it all at once.
I'll try. Okay, so let me just give a quick outline of where I have been this year. So at the end of March and all through April, I lived in Krakow, Poland. Then during May, I went to Kyiv, Ukraine, and then on to Odessa, Ukraine, where I stayed until mid-July. I also had the Istanbul trip in the middle there. And then after that, I went back to Kyiv for a couple days, then went to Warsaw, back to Krakow, did that family trip. I did go to Prague during that. And then most recently spent 10 days in Vilnius, Lithuania, before returning to Kyiv. So my initial impressions and recommendations would be, if you are a first-time traveler and you are not at the top of your game, both in a traveling and a girls' game sense, you might have a really hard time in Ukraine. The English is not good. The women are really tough to crack. And the further east you go, it's really going to be the same thing. Like I said, the more east you go in Europe, the worse the language gets, the better the women get, but it also becomes more difficult. So with that being said, a place like Poland is kind of in the same situation. It's a bridge to Western society. And based off of how things go in the coming years will determine how it ultimately ends up. So it's got a lot of the Western things that they like. They have McDonald's everywhere. They like to drink and party. They are becoming more masculinized. And that can be a good thing and a bad thing because the girls are much nicer by nature. They're still sweet. They'll still cook for you. They take care of you. And at the same time, they're sluttier. So you can easily get a Polish girl into bed in a matter of hours, and that will just simply almost never happen the further east you go, especially in Ukraine. So for men looking for that kind of first time, like, game trip, and they want to have a good adventure, and they want to see the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, it's very easy to get down on the dating scene in the U.S. and life in the U.S. So if you want something that's kind of right in the middle and you don't want to be too culture shocked, a place like Poland or a place like Vilnius is a good middle ground where people will be friendly, they'll be happy to speak English to you, the girls will be better than their Western counterparts, but still have some of the traits like that will allow them to meet you quickly. You can court a girl very quickly in a place like Poland. And that's, you know, when you have a corporate job and you only have 2 weeks of vacation a year, it's harder to go to a place where it's going to take 5 dates for you to have sex with a girl, as opposed to a place like Poland where you can do it in one night. And that kind of fun and adventure is almost what some men need to really break free of the shackles of society. So, if you had to put a gun to my head, I mean, I love Kyiv. I have a great girl here now. I'm very happy with the way that's gone. But I needed that time in the Western countries to be able to handle a place like Ukraine.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, I mean, your point on limited vacation travel and, you know, making the most of it is a good one, you know. I mean, my foreign experiences at the moment, I mean, I'm hoping to get out to Eastern Europe before the end of the year. But I've been to the Philippines, and I concentrated on two cities, Manila, the capital city, and Davao, which is a smaller, more conservative city on the southern end of Mindanao. And I recommend to guys who only have a limited amount of time to go around to vacation, to go to Manila, because you can get you can get laid within hours. Just go to a bar. There are plenty of cute girls who are looking to hook up with a foreign guy. Whereas in Davao, you need, you know, 2, 3, 4 dates minimum. You know, but it's also a place where you can find a more conservative chast girlfriend. Or if you're looking to get married, that's a good place to go. And also you bring up a great point that is echoed by guys who actually have gone abroad. You know, one of the, you know, more common insults against people like us is like, well, you're just going to other countries because you can't get laid in the U.S., you know. In actuality, it's a lot more difficult to get laid outside of your home country than not, because in addition to dealing with all the foibles of women everywhere, you have to add in a cultural barriers and, in most cases, a language barrier. I didn't have a language barrier in the Philippines because most everyone there speaks English. It's one of the official languages, but you have a cultural barrier that you have to overcome. So, you know, I think even, you know, Roosh said in one of his recent videos that if you really are looking to bang foreign girls that badly, you would actually be better off trying to stick to like au pair parties in a large city than going abroad, because you are going to have to contend with that, with those cultural and linguistic barriers.
Correct. I actually was interviewed by the biggest news site in Lithuania last week, and they published an article about me, and she made it seem like she was pretty nice and kind of came at me a bit, but it was like, you think that the women of Eastern Europe are cheap and easy. And I just laughed at her and I said, they're not easier at all. I mean, like I said, it takes a minimum of 3 dates in Ukraine usually to get a bang. And the fact of the matter is, you can't stand to go on a date, or you can't stand to go on 3 dates with an American girl these days. I would honestly rather pull my hair out. And so it's actually so much harder to bang over there, but it's so much more worth it. And I told her flat out, I said, if I wanted cheap and easy, I would go back to America where I can sit in my apartment on Tinder and get a girl to come straight over in an hour. I actually, you know, have to come out and work here. And so the fact of the matter is, you know, people will say, like you said, oh, you can't get laid at home. No, I can get laid at home way easier than I can abroad, but it's simply not worth it. It comes to a point where a lot of the Western girls in America, it's like banging a robot. It's just a different hole with different colored hair. And out here, the girls have substance. They have culture. They're interesting. They can challenge you in a non-ball-busting way. And they have all of these things that we just simply don't see in the West anymore. You know, it's seduction on the girl's part is a lost art. It's simply, I have a vagina, you should like me. And out here, girls really try to win your affection over, and it's something really beautiful to see. And the more time I spend out here, the more time, more I realize how broken the dating scene out west is. And so,
yeah,
you know, like I said, people are going to hate on it, but screw them.
Yeah, I mean, a good way to sum up is, you know, go abroad not to get laid easier, but to like get laid with a higher quality of woman. And there's a I think a lot of the dysfunction in the West is Kyle, what is your what are your observations on why Eastern Europe, these Eastern European countries have been able to resist the sort of social dysfunction that is taking place in the West? I mean, I actually – well, I've discussed this – I discussed this a couple of weeks ago on the podcast. I had Melissa Mazeros, who is a Hungarian translator. She was talking about that. But I want to get your perspective on it. You know, from an outsider's perspective, it would seem a bit odd that the countries that were under the communist jackboot, you know, the as far left as you can go, would be the ones that would produce women that are, you know, feminine, men that are masculine. And as you mentioned with Poland and Hungary, actually resisting the refugee invasion, the only countries in Europe that are resisting this refugee influx. What are your thoughts on this?
The first reason that the women are more friendly and more open to meeting men and are just better overall is simple economics. For whatever reason in the US, there seems to be, especially in Southern California where I've lived for the last 6 years, there are simply so many more men than women. And the women, when they have so much choice, are choosing not to pick anyone. They have it all. And as you come out here, for whatever reason, it seems that there is a gender disbalance on the opposite spectrum where there's more women for men. And so they're being forced to compete for them. Even as you go like further out to Russia, it's pretty common there. Like your husband is expected to cheat on you because he simply has so many options. And that's crazy to me that it's just expected because they're simply the quantity is so much higher as far as girls. The reason behind that is probably partially alcoholism. They tend to drink a lot and therefore they tend to die a little bit earlier. And I'm not sure the other things that go into it, but regardless, that's the way it is. And so the countries like Poland and Hungary are able to resist this because the men are used to women being feminine. And therefore, they have a natural inclination to want to protect their women. And when there's a gender disbalance like that, women, I think, deep down know that what turns and attracts and keeps a man is being sweet and a little bit submissive and feminine. It's not being ball busting. It's not having a corporate job. It's being able to cook good meals, take care of the house, and take care of the man. And I think all women know that at a biological level. Women of the West have it buried so deeply under them that they can't find it. And so when you have that, it brings out kind of the inner animal in their men. You know, it's when you have sweet girls, you want to protect them. Like, I feel the same way now out here, like with my girl, I want to protect her against everything. And you just simply don't have that desire in the West because women tell you your entire life that they're as good as you and they can fight for themselves and that they don't need men. Whereas a woman out here would never say that. And so as a result, when the women truly do need men, the men rise up. And a perfect example, like I was saying earlier, in Russia, I know there was been some attacks where, you know, refugees have been groping women on the street, and those refugees end up in the hospital, like flat out, like 30 guys just beat the shit out of them. And so when you have those women that are worth fighting for, men rise up. The problem is the West have none of those women that are worth fighting for.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Do you think you know, the revival of Christianity in Eastern Europe has anything to do with it? Like, again, this sort of dovetails to my own experiences in the Philippines. I'm not particularly religious myself. I mean, I was raised as a Catholic, but I never really I was never really into it. I was never really against it either. It was just sort of there. But you go to a place like the Philippines, and a lot of what you say is going on in Eastern Europe, Kyle, is also going on there. You have women who are very feminine, men who are married masculine, because there's a I don't know if the gender balance there is as, you know, lopsided in favor of women as it is in Eastern Europe. There really isn't, like, say, an alcoholism problem. But, like, life is cheap there because there's a lot of poverty. And women realize that in order to survive, you know, there's no – the government is basically a joke. In order to survive, they're going to need, you know, a good man to protect them. So they, you know, they actually go out of the way to court men. You know, they, you know, the way I described it in my book, Do the Philippines, is that, like, you know, even if a Filipina is not interested in you, she's going to be nicer than you than an American girl who actually is into you. You know, these social niceties are gone. But also the ever-present Catholic Church, for better or for worse, also sort of has a big influence in how these girls behave. And we've seen a revival of Christianity in Eastern Europe after the state-sponsored atheism of communism. We've seen the Orthodox Church once again take center stage in Russia. We've seen the growth of Catholicism in Poland and Hungary. Like, what are your thoughts on this?
It's funny enough that haven't really met anyone who consistently goes to church or anything of the sort. I think, obviously, I live in the major cities, and I think it's probably more prevalent as you go out to the villages. But let's assume, though, that out in the villages, in the smaller towns, that they are going to church, and it is a little bit more prevalent. So even then, when the girls go to the main city for college or they go to work, they at least have that foundation of a religious upbringing that kind of keeps them in check a little bit. And sure, things get a little more westernized in the big city and they explore a little bit, but it's still nowhere near as rampant as it would be in a place like America. So I don't really have any hard evidence that would suggest it's played a huge part, but my gut feeling tells me that it's out there somewhere and is having probably somewhat of an effect on it. Whether that makes or breaks the whole culture, I don't really know. I think that comes down more simply to the values. At the same time, like I said, Poland is kind of a hybrid of, say, Ukraine and the West. And the scary thing is that, like, Tinder, as of, I think, last year, caught on in Ukraine. And it's like, but it's still not big. Whereas Tinder in the U.S. 5 years ago, maybe not 5 years ago, but 3 years ago, was very good. So these Eastern European places are almost a couple years behind the times. Our technology, our attention-whoring technology reaches them, and they start to go a little bit downhill. So the question is, you know, in 2 more years, will Poland become more westernized? In 3 years, what will Ukraine look like? Will it look like Poland does now? Will this eventually reach Russia? And so I almost feel like the technology and the ability of a country to keep up with what we have in the West is probably the biggest factor, more so than the religion. Once a girl is out of the family, out of the house, out of the church, it becomes a lot harder, I think, to resist the very easy pleasures of all the attention they can get on something as simple as a smartphone.
Yeah, that's interesting, and it kind of dovetails with my observations. I believe that I've gotten in, you know, hot water for arguing this, but I think in many ways technology is a bigger contributor to the poor gender relations in the West than feminism is at this stage. Like you mentioned Tinder, you know, not just Tinder, but the entire infrastructure of like smartphones and all this stuff that allows people to communicate instantaneously, but also like keep them at arm's length. You know, if someone displeases you, you can just block them on Facebook or whatever. You don't have to be confronted with opposing opinions or people who exist outside of your who are different from you, and then that's in part where you get all these sort of these youngy snowflake types who need trigger warnings on their class syllabi, and they freak out when they encounter an opinion that's slightly different than theirs. They're like, you evil shitlord, misogynist, racist, whatever. You know, it's technology has really fed into that. You know, because back in, you know, as recently as 10 years ago, I mean, I still remember an era, but, you know, before we had ubiquitous social networking and whatnot. You know, you couldn't act like this when the majority of interaction was through face-to-face interaction or over the phone. You had to actually respect other human beings, whereas now you have an entire generation of just socially stunted idiots in every fashion, not just in the realm of sex, but just in the realm of interpersonal relationships and everything else. There was that statistic that showed that millennials are actually having less sex out of wedlock than previous generations. And the reason for this is not because millennials are more moral in the West anyway. It's because technology has basically, you know, made them dysfunctional to the point where they can't interact with anyone normally. You know, they're too busy watching porn on their computers or playing video games or doing whatever it is they do.
Yeah, you're totally correct with that, Matt. And another problem with that too is something like Tinder has made it accessible. And this may be a part of the reason too that the women are better out here. 3 years ago, or 5 years ago, I should say, you actually had to go talk to girls in person. And I was around at that time, and I know what it's like to put my work in the trenches. But the problem is now, as you said, any nerd with a smartphone can sit there jerking off, playing video games, and maybe getting dates too. And so when you put that many more desperate guys into the pool, it's more attention for girls. And as a result, they're less likely just to settle down with any one guy. But kind of going on with what you said there, you know, people get triggered now, and it's funny because they will spout their opinions everywhere on the internet, but as soon as they see one they disagree with, they're triggered, and oh no, like, what is going to happen? And I've realized now how powerful this is, and I'm sure you felt the same thing, that I don't have a corporate job. Like, what is someone going to do to me? I live in Eastern Europe. I have my own blog. I have my own money. What are they going to do to me? I can piss off whoever I want, and there's literally no consequences. And it's funny that all these people who talk about being triggered and how things need to change are the same ones crying when one mean tweet hurts their feelings and they go and get people fired. And the fact of the matter is, it's become such a degenerate thing that so far Eastern Europe, and it sounds like the Philippines, has been able to resist. The question is, as it gets more and more progressively ingrained in their culture, can they still resist it?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, I think, in some ways for cultures that are intact enough to resist this technology invasion. Like I've commented on the Philippines, smartphones are pretty ubiquitous there. I mean, to the point where even really poor people will have flip phones because texting is very cheap there. Making a phone call is expensive, but like text and like phone data is just dirt cheap. But it doesn't seem to really affect the culture. You know, people are not obsessively hovering over their phones in public. You know, they're actually interacting with their families or whoever. The big thing I noticed in the Philippines that will probably deleteriously affect the culture in about 10 years down the line, there's going to be an obesity crisis because the big thing they're into is, they enjoy McDonald's and other American fast food franchises like KFC. KFC is very big in the Philippines. And you see these kids who are like 7 years old, but they're massively overweight. Like you've seen the pictures of you've seen them in person, massively overweight kids in the U.S. because their parents give them a steady diet of soda and junk food. That's happening in the middle classes among the Philippines. So I see an obesity crisis going down the line, which will that will affect relations because this goes all the way back to what Hartis was writing about in 2008. You have a lot of fat women in the United States and other Western countries. Men are not attracted to fat women, so that results in a scramble for the increasingly smaller percentage of skinny women whose egos go through the roof.
Mm-hmm. The good news is that in Eastern Europe, I don't see that coming because it's still like family home cooking is very much valued. Like I'll use my current girlfriend for an example. Just last night, she was telling me like, I think my family and I, we eat out like four times a year, like holidays and birthdays, and that's about it. And so when you have that kind of ingrained culture of we cook at home and this is family time, it is a lot healthier. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you're dead on. That's part of the reason for the gender imbalance in America is that, what is it? Probably 70% of the women at this point are no longer attractive and bangable. And even in California, you know, sunny land of bikinis and bathing suits, it's still very prevalent. You've got lots of obese people, and that's, again, skewing the gender economics there of there's now less attractive women in the dating pool, so men are going to fawn more attention on the ones that are attractive, and as a result, those ones get a lot of attention and are less likely to settle down and, you know, pick one man and have a family. And then, yeah, you put a place out here, like with a gender imbalance, and you'll see the girls aren't on their smartphones because they're not getting that attention. They're much more likely to focus on you. But yeah, as long as there's McDonald's, man, I'm always going to be a little scared of how a place is going to turn out. And I've found that that is a good indication of how many KFCs and McDonald's do I see. If I see a lot of them, I know there's going to be a good influx of Western influence and can brace myself.
The
good news, though, like I said, is as long as you continue to go ahead.
I was gonna make a joke. You know, the golden arches theory of increasing degeneracy or fat assitude.
You're absolutely right, dude. Like, you go to Poland and there's McDonald's on a lot of corners, and the girls are starting to act quite a bit differently than they even did a few years ago. When I went to a smaller town in 2014, I can see a bit of a difference between 2014 and 16. And it's going to be up to the men, really, to enforce this and not reward women for putting on weight and still banging them like we do in the West, because that's all we have. And so if the Eastern European countries continue to have strong men who are willing to stand up to an invasion, hopefully those same men are the ones that are saying, no, I'm not going to date an overweight, unattractive woman. I want a thin woman thin woman. And as a result, the women of that society will all have to be still competing for those strong men. Like I said, it's very much a domino effect. And if it's not kind of nipped in the bud right away, there seems to be no end to the degeneracy of it, as we've continued to see in America.
Yeah, exactly. Now, to sort of push things a bit forward, you've written a couple of books, Kyle, that we're going to talk a bit about before we close up the program. You've written Cracking OK Cupid, and more germane to the subject of this segment of the podcast, you also wrote Trouble in Hungary, about your experiences in Hungary. And as an aside, Arctos, the parent company of Write On, which allows me to produce this podcast every Monday, is actually based in Hungary. Do you want to talk a bit more about Cracking OK Cupid and Trouble in Hungary?
Yeah, absolutely. So Cracking OK Cupid, I wrote a year and a half or so ago, and it's basically an all-encompassing guide of using OK Cupid to meet girls. Whether you want to use it just to meet casual girls for sex, or if you want to actually find a relationship, it pretty much runs you through the entire process between crafting your profile, sending the first message, how to escalate that message thread to get a number, using her number, then text, set up a date, and as well as then obviously on the date, moving it forward to where you want to steer the interaction. And Trouble in Hungary is really good starting guide for guys who want to take their first trip abroad. It's much more of just a adventure kind of story. It details my 10 nights that I had in Budapest of last year, when I was basically going balls to the wall, meeting cute foreign girls, as well as a lot of info on Budapest itself. And that, like I said, that's a good indication of how it's not easy with these girls out here. It can be a lot of work. It can be a challenge. And I think it's actually a pretty good blueprint of what guys can expect who want to go abroad and meet girls in a different country. It's not going to be all fun and games, but it can be worth it. And that was like one of my first like kind of game trips abroad. So it was a really good learning experience. And, you know, now it's a little bit easier. I'm much more, you know, if I'm landing in a new country, I know exactly what to do. But it's a good blueprint of what can happen and maybe what you shouldn't do with in regards to Trouble in Hungary.
I can attest to Cracking OK Cupid being a really good book that basically helped me basically use OK Cupid, you know, and actually get dates off of it. Whereas I was just sort of I was kind of a Luddite late adapter to online dating period. The only time I had extensively used it before that when I was in the Philippines. But to talk a bit more about your experiences in Hungary, how does Hungary sort of fit into the whole like what are the women like there, et cetera? Because we've talked extensively about Ukraine, Poland, Lithuania. How would you rank Hungary in relation to all those other countries?
For me personally, not as high. And I think part of that is because the men there are simply better looking than almost anywhere else. Like in a lot of these other places, the men are just not good looking. I'm not horrible looking by any means, but I'm one of the better looking guys in some of these countries. Whereas Hungary, they seem to have their shit pretty well together. And so as a result, I think that does make their women a little more picky. Hungary also just kind of wears on you. They have what's called the Budapest bitch shields, where girls tend to be very cold or very hot. And I had rejections as bad as like in LA, where I'd go up to talk to a girl and they would just kind of look at me and walk away. And that's just part of the process. But you don't really get that in Poland or Ukraine. Like girls will at least smile and, you know, politely reject you. Whereas in Hungary, they have no hesitation just to walk away. And so in that aspect, it can wear on you and really can kind of bring you down. But With that being said, I will say that if you meet the right Hungarian girl, and I mean, I was only there for 10 days, you can have a very good relationship just like you could in a lot of these other places. But I think it's that initial hurdle which will turn a lot of guys off of that. But I mean, Hungary itself, I mean, Budapest is beautiful. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. The food is excellent. It's one of the places I really did consider kind of going to long term when I started this trip this year, which with the intention of finding a new permanent home. But things have changed, obviously. But I would not hesitate to recommend Budapest to any guys out there that want to, you know, meet some very beautiful women as well as experience a cool culture. Just, you know, bring a tough shield around you.
That's interesting. I'm looking into actually visiting Budapest later in the year or early next year. I had no idea about it. So I guess thanks for the heads up. Now we are at the end of the program. Kyle, do you have anything else you'd like to bring up before we close out the show?
No, but thank you for the opportunity, man. I'm really glad that you're continuing to cover all the stuff that you've been covering in regards to the election and getting some honest journalism out there. I think we need more people like you that are really giving the truth and aren't just listening to the news outlets. Because just judging by these two trips I've had this year to Paris and Istanbul, we know that the media out there is putting a lot of crap in the eyes of a lot of people. And so continue up with the good work of reporting the truth, and hopefully things get better in the coming years. And I hope to see you out here in Eastern Europe if you make it out here this year.
Yeah, hey, appreciate it, man. And we'll definitely make that happen. I've been talking to Kyle Trouble. You can check out his blog, This Is Trouble, at thisistrouble.com. Also, check out his satellite site, Bachelor Travels, bachelortravels.com. You can get his books, Cracking OK Cupid, Trouble in Hungary, as well as his course, The Harem Handbook. There, that's all available through thisistrouble.com. You are on Twitter at twitter.com/truthfultrouble. You can also listen to his podcast, Troublesome Radio, on SoundCloud. And you can also check out his YouTube channel. Search This Is Trouble on YouTube. All links to Kyle's online empire, you can find them in the description of this podcast. Kyle, I'd like to thank you once again for coming on the program.
Absolutely. Thank you, Matt. Take care. All right.
And that was Kyle Trouble, and that will conclude this episode of This Alt-Right Life. I'll be back next week, but until then, I invite you to check out our website, righton.net, for our latest articles, podcasts, and videos. You can also check out my personal blog at mattforney.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the show, please share it on Twitter, Facebook, and other social media. If you're listening via SoundCloud, please like the show by hitting the heart icon on the player. You can also repost it to your accounts by hitting the repost button. Subscribe via SoundCloud, go to soundcloud.com/rightonradio. If you're listening via YouTube, please like the show by hitting the thumbs up icon below the player. You can also subscribe via Stitcher and the iTunes Store. And finally, if you're listening via the iTunes Store, please take the time to rate the podcast, which will increase its visibility and allow the good gospel of the alternative right and the European New Right to reach more people. This All Right Life is presented by Chloe Love and Davis Arini. Check them out on the web at chloelove.com and staresattheworld.com. And the show also features music by Winglord, Illegitimate Non-Carborundum. Don't let the bastards grind you down. I'm Matt Forney. Thanks for listening. I'm out.